This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Trucking giant Yellow files for bankruptcy. Plus, why inflation data has been roiling markets and could do so again this week, and the specter of $100 oil.
In some cities, we've seen up to 30 or 40 cent jumps per gallon in just a week's time. So depending on whether you fill up your tank on a Monday versus a Thursday, you could be paying $3, $4, $5 more for that entire tank of gas than you would have beforehand.
It's Monday, August 7th. I'm Luke Vargas for the Wall Street Journal. And here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Trucking company Yellow has filed for bankruptcy and plans to begin selling assets, which include some 12,000 trucks and dozens of freight terminals across the U.S. Sunday's Chapter 11 filing also means the loss of 30,000 jobs, including 22,000 positions held by members of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. The union and Yellow CEO Darren Hawkins have been sparring over what was to blame for Yellow's demise. Hawkins blamed the union, citing protracted labor negotiations that culminated in Teamsters blocking a proposed operational overhaul this spring, while a Teamsters spokesman said that workers had kept the company afloat for over a decade through concessions on wages and benefits. And labor tensions at Yellow are just one example of how surging demands on transport workers are fueling standoffs at companies critical to U.S. supply chains. FedEx pilots recently rejected a new labor contract promising a roughly 30% raise, and dock workers at West Coast ports have slowed work at container terminals. WSJ reporter Esther Fung says this renewed labor activism is being driven by inflation, as well as a feeling among transport workers that they're entitled to a larger share of corporate profits that were generated during the pandemic.
Transportation workers are demanding higher wages and better quality of life. After showing up to work during the pandemic, they said that they made a lot of sacrifices coming to work at the threat of their own health. So they feel that this is their moment to demand higher wages and better quality of life. Railroad companies are offering paid sick leave to railroad workers when that was a sticking point in national wage contracts last year. UPS said that it would be installing cooling equipment in delivery vehicles. The companies have also given higher wages, and these are usually record high wages in their own history of contract negotiations with unions.
Buckle up for what could be a volatile week in markets with a hefty serving of inflation data expected in the coming days. According to Goldman Sachs senior economist Spencer Hill, stock market sensitivity to inflation news over the past year is running at 12 times the historical norm, while Treasury yield sensitivity is 7 times the historical median. Markets reporter Joe Wallace said that with consumer inflation figures and producer price numbers due out this week, more market swings could well be in the cards.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has said that the central bank will rely heavily on incoming data in deciding whether interest rates have risen high enough to bring inflation back down to target or whether one or two more rate hikes are needed. That obviously focuses the minds of investors on the data releases that the Fed will also be examining in weighing up that decision. Investors are also examining economic data even more closely than normal, given the uncertainty about the economic outlook and the fears that have been around for much of the year, now dissipating somewhat about a recession in the U.S. And indeed, Mr. Hill from Goldman Sachs hypothesizes that there's been a shift in how investors view the risk of a recession recently, and that that has changed the way that the market is responding to data. So in the early months of the year, the market tended to rally on strong data. In recent months, that's flipped, because the risk is that if the economy is still running very hot, the Fed might raise rates another time or two.
Right. So then what does all of this mean then for individual investors?
Traders and investors such as Dave Lutz, head of ETF trading at Jones Trading, who my colleague spoke to for this article, say there's been a big flurry in activity around economic data releases this summer, particularly from institutional clients such as hedge funds and pension funds. As soon as the data are out, he says, they've been readjusting their portfolios. So, for example, last September, when a CPI data release showed that consumer prices were running much faster than anyone had expected, the S&P 500 slumped 4.3%. That was its worst day since the first year of the pandemic. The fear, of course, was that the Fed would have to raise rates much higher than anyone had thought. Then 2 months later, the reverse happened. Some data were released showing that price pressures seemed to be abating. There was a massive rally of 5.5%. So anyone in the market around these releases should be worried that there can be some outsized moves, especially in summer trading when there's not as much activity as normal. There are fewer buyers and sellers to mute the impact on prices of any big surge in activity.
That was markets reporter Joe Wallace. Coming up, we'll look at what is driving a multi-week surge in the value of oil, what that means for prices at the pump, and how much more of a run-up we should expect. That and more after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Oil is edging higher this morning, adding to a rally in crude prices that could bring oil back to $100 a barrel. Growing demand for fuel, hot weather, and oil producers disagreeing on production targets is helping to drive the price rise, meaning that we're all heading for pricier trips to the pump. And Journal Energy Markets reporter David Uberti is in New York and joins me now with the very latest. David, expand a bit on what is causing this current run-up in prices. It was just a month and a half ago we were reporting that gas prices were easing ahead of the summer driving season.
Yeah, prices at the pump usually fall over the course of summer driving season. That's just a historical norm. But this summer has been unusual for a couple of reasons. And more recently, we've had some pretty fast increases of gasoline and diesel costs across the United States. There are two buckets of reasons for this. The first is what I would call midterm reasons. Russia and Saudi Arabia, major oil exporters, have both instituted production cuts, which takes supplies off the market. And at the same time, the U.S. economy has been doing pretty well. And we, as we all know, we suck up a lot of diesel and gasoline. The second bucket of reasons, more short-term in particular to this weird summer, is that it's been really hot. And that affects oil prices in a couple of different ways. First and foremost, when you're refining oil into gasoline or diesel, that requires heating things, cooling things, heating things, and cooling things again. And if the temperature of air is hotter outside, naturally, it takes longer amounts of time to cool some of those very volatile and flammable substances. So even if that affects refinery runs by 1%, 2%, 3 percentage points, that could have an impact on the ultimate price that you pay when you fill up your tank of gas. Secondly, because it's so hot, we're seeing these record or near record temperatures of some parts of the Atlantic. Some forecasters who look at hurricane season are, for that reason, season projecting an above average storm season. And where do those hurricanes often come through? Through the Gulf Coast toward the heart of America's refining sector. So on Wall Street, many of the people who buy and sell different financial instruments tied to gasoline or oil or diesel, they are basically placing a bet that the hurricane season might be bad. It could knock a refinery offline, and in doing so, send gasoline prices even higher.
Yeah, we're going to loop back around to the forecast in a little bit, but just on prices, we often quote Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate here on the podcast. These are barrel prices. How fast are increases that we might be seeing there actually translating into what people are paying at the pump?
Right. So crude oil has risen by about 17 or 18% over the last month. And we've seen a similar increase in the wholesale price of gasoline and diesel. And depending on where you are in the United States, your price could be more or less than those increases. So over the last month, the average AAA monitored price for gasoline in the United States has risen by about 30 cents per gallon. But particularly in the Sun Belt, and even more so in Florida, we're seeing gas stations really ramp up their prices. In some cities, we've seen up to 30 or 40 cent jumps per gallon in just a week's time. So depending on whether you fill up your tank on a Monday versus a Thursday, you could be paying $3, $4, $5 more for that entire tank of gas than you would have beforehand.
Okay, so you don't have to really strain the imagination to see how this quickly could become a fresh inflation pressure for consumers, and I'd imagine for industry too as well.
We use a lot of oil for fuel, but we also use it for a class of chemicals known as petrochemicals. And the main way that petrochemicals are used are in the development of plastics. And as we know, plastics figure into almost everything that we use in our day-to-day lives. So if you're a manufacturer, you need that feedstock to produce your end product. So if the price of oil for that feedstock ends up going by, say, 20%, give or take, that's going to boost your overall prices in production. And as we've known from the past year or two, producers and companies always pass those costs on to consumers. So at the end of the day, it is us, you and me, who are going to be fielding those costs.
And finally, David, going forward, earlier this week, we noted that some banks, Societe Generale, notably, were forecasting Brent crude could reach $100 a barrel next year. Standard Chartered put that at $98 a barrel. What are you hearing? What's going to determine whether this current run-up in prices continues?
Yeah, most people who I speak with on Wall Street generally expect prices to continue ticking upwards through the rest of the year and into 2024. Brent right now, which is the global benchmark, is trading around $85 per barrel. And many of the big banks forecast a 5, 10, potentially 15% increase from that in the coming months and year. UBS, for example, projects $95 Brent starting in 2024. Bank of America is $90 or so. But the one unifying thing throughout these forecasts is that many analysts believe that the market has tightened. Supply has come more in line with demand as we've had some of these production cuts from Saudi Arabia and Russia. And as you and I spoke of earlier with the hurricane, the real question is whether there is one of these unforeseen shocks, be it some sort of inclement weather or a potential geopolitical situation that could cause prices to spike.
That was Wall Street Journal Energy Markets reporter David Uberti in New York. David, thanks so much for the update.
Thanks, Luke.
Donald Trump's legal defense against charges that he conspired to remain in power after losing the 2020 election could be beginning to take shape. Trump lawyer John Lauro told NBC's Meet the Press yesterday that even if the former president violated the Constitution when pressuring former Vice President Mike Pence not to certify the 2020 election results, that doesn't make it a crime. Lauro also argued that Trump's expression of concerns about election irregularities was protected speech under the First Amendment, a defense that Trump put forward at a campaign stop in South Carolina over the weekend.
It is an outrageous criminalization of political speech. They're trying to make it illegal to question the results of an election.
Trump has denied any wrongdoing. The Justice Department and Trump's lawyers are due back in court on August 28th as the judge in the case works to set a trial date. Russia and China sent a combined naval force near the coast of Alaska last week in what U.S. experts call the largest such flotilla to approach American shores. According to U.S. officials, 11 ships from the Russian and Chinese navies neared the Aleutian Islands without entering U.S. territorial waters and were trailed by American ships and aircraft. U.S. officials have been closely monitoring signs of increased cooperation between Beijing and Moscow, especially since the start of the war in Ukraine. Russia's defense ministry and China's embassy in Washington said the Russian and Chinese vessels had carried out annual drills. The Russian embassy in Washington didn't respond to a request for comment. Ukrainian peace discussions are inching forward following talks over the weekend. Officials from Ukraine and 41 countries, including the U.S., China, and India, met in Saudi Arabia to discuss fair conditions to end the war. Western diplomats have said the kingdom was picked to host partly in the hopes of persuading China to participate. Saudi Arabia is also trying to play a larger role in Ukraine diplomacy after the U.S. accused it last year of siding with Russia to keep oil prices high and thus bolstering Moscow's finances. Russia was not a part of the talks, however, and a foreign ministry spokeswoman called the discussions a hoax. And global migration has reached an all-time high, resulting in millions of people sending record sums of money back home. According to the World Bank, remittances to developing nations have nearly doubled since 2010, reaching $647 billion last year, surpassing foreign direct investments and international development aid. Journal reporter Ryan Dubay says the surge in money transfers is providing critical support for people in poverty.
There's more people leaving Latin America, Africa, Asia, and also the migrants who are already there in the U.S. and Europe in more developed, kind of rich countries. They are finding jobs due to the labor shortage, so they're finding higher paying jobs, allows them to make more money, and they're able to send that back home. So remittances are really crucial for kind of lifting people out of poverty and alleviating poverty in poor countries. They allow families to buy food, buy clothing, kind of basic items like that. Some people use them to maybe start a small business, a grocery store, a restaurant perhaps, but it's also kind of indirectly and unwittingly helping the governments of these sometimes autocratic states and very fragile states in order to help them maintain their hold on power as well.
And finally,
Hi, Barbie.
Greta Gerwig's Barbie has now surpassed $1 billion at the box office, according to research firm Comscore, making it the first U.S. film from a solo female director to reach the milestone. The summer blockbuster starring Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling has become a cultural phenomenon through a savvy mix of consumer marketing and a story that resonates with audiences. Barbie's success, along with that of Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, which has grossed just over $500 million globally, has been a rare bright spot for Hollywood amid continuing labor strikes and a shift in consumer viewing habits that's led many to stream movies at home. And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.